Ja, steht gerade Kette Schwagertäum. Ja, das ist mein.
Ja, steht gerade Kette Schwagertäum. 1, 2, 3.
You know, sometimes you start that, you never can quit. Did you recognize that? You slobs. You guys, you absolutely listen carefully to it again. No, play it at the regular speed, Nicholas, and listen carefully to it and tell me, do you recognize it? 1, 2, 3. Go on. Now listen. Now listen carefully. There you go. My God, you finally got it. Thank you. Thank you. That's the Jersey version of my theme. Very nice. Reset that then. You know, it's terrible. It's just terrible. That's one of the worst piece of music I ever heard in my life. But that actually is the Jersey version of my theme. You know, it's a real foot-stomping polka. Guys sitting around swigging down the Schaefer and yelling and hollering. And that's what it is. Did you recognize it, Nick? I tell you, of course. You notice I handle that Polish polka stuff real great. Well, I'm going to give you... I shouldn't really bring this stuff up at this point, because right now, I might say this, Nick, I'm gaining a foothold in the official world. It's, I'm clinging on the edge of the cliff, but gaining a foothold. As a matter of fact, I'm walking along 48th Street today, walking along Fifth Avenue. And you know, at the corner of 5th Avenue and 48th Street, there's a fantastic Brentano's bookshop there. Well, whose book do you think is piled up right next to the Greek columns? That's right. Ferrari in the bedroom right next to Jonathan Livingston. What the hell is that damn bird? yeah, there I am, right there. And me and David Halberstam, all the other official people. So I really shouldn't be doing this polka stuff. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story about that, though. I was clearing out all the crud in my life, just getting rid of it. You know, once in a while, you go through this thing. I hope you do. I mean, I like to think you do, Nick. But we, more civilized people, when we occasionally just clear out the crud out of our lives and just throw out all the old receipts you got. You know, stuff that you don't even remember buying. You got them all at the bottom of your bureau drawers, and all those old socks you haven't worn for a long time, you know, the ones with the tassels on top and all that. And oh, listen, I've got a raincoat that I've been threatening to throw out now ever since I was 12. And there's something about the raincoat. I just can't get rid of it. Have you ever had a piece of wearing apparel that on the one hand you hate to put it on because it's so rotten? On the other hand, it's got some kind of an emotional pull on you. And you just keep it. And I have a raincoat that, honest to John, this raincoat looks really like, well, what it looks like is a compost heap with sleeves. You missed that. I'll repeat it. My raincoat looks like a compost heap with sleeves. And what's worse, the sleeves are torn. I mean, it's a compost heap with torn sleeves. And I walk around, and somehow I feel right in that rotten thing. It's like Columbo. You ever seen Columbo? You know, Columbo does this duck and shuffle act and all that stuff he does. And somehow that raincoat, and by the way, that raincoat has, I'm sure, among other things that I've had in my life, has always succeeded in creating in the impression of official people who see me in this raincoat that Shepard is nothing really more nor less than a bum on the verge of, you know, just going all out and being a real bum, you know, sitting around and down in the Bowery and hollering and drinking Thunderbird and yelling and, you know, hoping for another quarter to come my way. But now, I'll give you a little story, though, about that piece of music there, in case you're interested in that story. I know you must be, but it does have a history, and so damn little in our world has a history. So when we do have a little history, might as well talk about it. That one time in my somewhat checkered past, and that was a very desperate 6 weeks that I spent doing this, I was roughly 16 and a half. I got a summer job as the only English-speaking announcer on a completely foreign radio station. I mean, it wasn't in another country. It was in Chicago, as a matter of fact. But all their broadcasting, well, that's a foreign country to many of you. But it to us was home, you know. I mean, to the lower Slavovians, I guess lower Slavovia is home, you know. And you come on, you know, get off my back. I like them schmooze. And nevertheless, I worked at this radio station, see, and it was one of these stations that believed that experience is what makes a man a success. So they gave me plenty of experience. I started at 5 in the morning, and I would finish at midnight, 7 days a week. Got a hell of a lot of experience. See. Well, are you kidding? Any place that gives you experience isn't going to pay you. No way. In fact, they would be pained whenever the subject of pay would come up because this was considered, well, in a sense, it was considered bad taste around there. They never talked much about money, but they talked a lot about getting to work on time. So it was in the back of a Chevy agency, this radio station was, and they had a room, like, you know, where they had kept all the old rags that they wiped off motors and stuff. Actually, and that's a funny part of it, is that they had not given it over completely to a radio station, the studios. So there would be cans of number 30 oil, you know, would be lined up on the walls of the studios. So right in the middle of a show, this guy wearing coveralls would come in and get four cans of number 30 W oil and run out. And he'd just run in and grab it and run out. You know, you're right in the middle of a newscast or something. It didn't make any difference. And we had a wind-up turntable, two wind-up turntables, actually. And our microphone, the only one mic, they had a microphone there. And this microphone apparently is one of these mics, you know, that when you buy a tape recorder from Sears, it says with microphone. Well, that was one of the microphones from one of those things, see? And they had put it on a stand. It was the stand, and I'm not kidding you if you think I'm being funny, but the stand was a converted stand for a canary cage. You know, have you ever seen those stands that stand up and they have a hook on the top, like, and they hang a canary on it? Have you ever seen that, Jerry? Well, they had gotten one of those someplace, you know, Salvation Army or something, and they had cut the hook off, and the guy soldered on the blunt end of the hook, he soldered a screw connection, and our microphone was screwed into that. And it was kind of nice. Gave a little kind of style to it because it had little raised on the base. It had little raised canary birds running around the bottom of it. And it was totally foreign language broadcasting. In fact, our radio station, the frequency was interesting. The frequency of this radio station, you know, the point on the dial, was so far down the dial that we used to get interference from the police calls. Yeah, well, every once in a while. Yeah, I'm not kidding. There would be interference. Would break right into the middle of your newscast. And so people were getting real live news often listening to us.
Ex-murderer is loose on the diversity ballpark.
And then right in the middle, we didn't know it at the time, but we were getting the hottest news in town. You know, we were getting the flashes right on the newscast. So we had these great big, there were tremendous, had been parts bins all around the walls of this room where the radio station was. But now each bin had a label on it. And they were metal bins. And they had like slots where, you know, where they had kept stuff like cylinder heads were in this one slot, and pistons were in this slot, exhaust systems were hanging from here. Well, each one of these bins now had a name on it, and the name was a different... one slot said, the one by the door said, Polski. Well, that was all the Polish records were in that, see? And the next one said, the Hunyak, which meant all the Hungarian records were in this one, see? And these guys would come in, and I don't know where they came from, but they were very official-looking guys, would come in, and they would do their shows. They said very little to me or to anybody else around there. I was the English-speaking announcer, so they had nothing to say to me. All I did was occasionally give the station break between the shows. And it was my job to introduce them, Nick. I would introduce them. So it would go like this, see? I would come to theme. It's now 3:30 in the afternoon, and the theme would come on like this. Then I would say in my 250-watt announcer voice, I would say, Yo shtet kedvane kedvish hogatoim. Yo shtet kedvish hogatoim. Ja, das ist ein Josef Sokratesh. I had just introduced Josef Sokratesh, who would then come on and say, thank you, John. Thank you, John. He never could quite, you know, get the name right. But that was close enough. So, thank you, John. Which roughly translated means, good afternoon, radio listeners. It is unbelievable fortunate that we are to have you listening to us. And we are now going to lay some commercials and some Polski and some Hungarian music on you. Well, of course, what happened was that these guys, they realized I was making no money. This, by the way, is WOR New York. Yes, indeed. Yoishtet. So they realized that I was scratching, see? So they would come in every, yeah, well, you know, you can't get away from it. I mean, it will out, friend. And so every day these guys would come in, and they were great guys, especially Yoishtet, especially Josef Sokratesh. It was not spelled that way. It was a complex Hungarian name. But Sokratesh would come in every afternoon about 5 minutes before his show, and he always wore white suits. I had never seen this before. Really, he wore white suits with the, you know, really white suit. And he was big. He was a huge guy, and he had a bald head, very bald, and he wore rimless glasses, and he looked almost exactly like Sidney Greenstreet. If you can imagine Sidney Greenstreet, you were imagining Cornelius Josef Sokratesh. And he would come in, and he would always greet me in this indescribable accent and almost impossible to understand language. It was a combination of 75% Hungarian, about probably 20% Czechoslovakian, maybe 3% Polish, and way at the edge of the pie of the language, if you can imagine it, a pie, you know, little slices, was this little tiny bit of pidgin English. And that he would come in, he would go, and I'd say, and he would say, good. And he would point out of the window. Always point out the window. He would point at the sky, and he would say in Hungarian, he would go, which means it's going to rain. Which it always was over that radio station. Rain year in and year out there. And at that point, he would lay on me, because, see, I introduced his show, he would lay on me what he considered, I guess, would be his tip for doing the show. He would give me this big, always came in a basket, see. His wife would fix these fantastic Hungarian cookies. Man, yeah, he'd give me the cookies, see? So I'd enjoy the cookies. And then the next show would be this guy named Kazimierz would come on. And Kazimierz Walaczek would do the Polish show. Well, he would lay these Polish sausages on me. And then the Greek guy would come in. Yeah, the Greek guy. We had a Greek guy came in. And the Greek would, yeah, he was named, he had a great name. And he would come on. He would give me these Greek, you know, this Greek, have you ever had baklava? This Middle Eastern stuff. He'd always bring in this baklava. They always bring me food, see? So I would take it back, and I'd sit around, you know, what are you going to do with this? And in the back, and they gave me this little room where I could wait in there while they were doing their show. It was a little broom closet, see? And I'd sit back there surrounded by all my goodies for the day. And I'd say by 4 o'clock, there was no way I could look at anything to eat. You know, it started out at the crack of dawn, the earliest show we had, which is a really, really early show. Because apparently these guys got up very early in the morning. There's certain types of people get up like earlier than other people. For example, Viennese people never get up early in the morning. You know, this is a this is a very sybaritic crowd, and we actually had a Viennese show on, which came like about 9 o'clock at night when they were all up and drinking their coffee with the whipped cream, and you know, eating their torts. And so that was the Viennese show. But who do you think got up earliest in the morning? That they were on like 6 o'clock in the morning, and apparently they were all listening. Who was up at that hour? Well, you don't know. Well, it was the Croatians. No, the Croatians, for some reason, there's an unrest in the Croatian soul which causes Croatians to get up at the crack of dawn. Maybe it's from generations of feeding pigs or something. And so, yeah, they're up at the earliest hour of the morning, and the Croatians are calling in. And they used to have request shows, where these Croatians would call in and request a Croatian piece of music. And he only had the same records all the time. There's no such thing as the top 40 in the Croatian world or the Hungarian world. They keep playing the same records over and over again. They have about 25, maybe 30 records, and guys would call in, and they would charge him for it. And so, you paid $1 for a regular request. Now, if you wanted it dedicated for a birthday, it was $2.50. That's the truth. If it was a wedding, it was $5. And if it was a wedding, he would also, at that point, he would wish the bride a happy marriage in Hungarian or Croatian or whatever the language happened to be. Now, it was my job to sit there and tally them all down. These things, apparently they split with the station. I don't know how it worked. And so this was a very very colorful period in my artistic development of life. And so, one day, Cornelius Sakatish, Joseph Cornelius Sakatish came in, and he's all excited. And he's usually very placid. You know how Sidney Greenstreet was. He's always very cool. And this is the way Cornelius Sakatish was, always cool. But this day, he was all excited. And he says, Janos, he calls me Janos. He's talking very fast Hungarian. And I said, was ist? And he says, Janos, he's going like so. He's waving his arms. And I finally got out of him that I was invited to a banquet that was being given honoring several very prominent members of the Hungarian community. And I was invited by the leaders of the Hungarian community. And, he said, very good, very good. And so I said, okay, when, you know? And so he said, going to be Saturday night. And so Saturday night, I arrived at this hall, the Hungarian American Hall. I don't know why I'm telling you this, but I arrived at this hall, see, and I brought along my buddy. See, I figured as long as it's going to be a free meal tonight, I might as well bring along Schwartz. See, so the two of us arrived, and we got on our, you know, we're all dressed up with the ties and the bit, and walk into the hall, and there's Hungarian guys all over the place, big handlebar mustaches and stuff, you know, and the Hungarians have a fantastic. As the Hungarians listening will agree with this, the Hungarians have a tremendous zest for living, to put it mildly. Even more than that, Hungarian ladies have a zest for living. If you've ever known any Hungarian girls, you've known real women. This is high octane, Nick, really all the way. Well, Hedy Lamarr is an example. Yes, I mean, they're magnificent creatures. And they all look like Sophia Loren studied under them. And oh, my. So I walk into the hall, and here they are. And there's a big cheer goes up when I come in. Which, Schwartz, what's up? So who are they cheering? And I realize they're cheering me. I walk in there, and I've got my electric blue sport coat on. Why, I should tell you this, you know. And, of course, immediately at that point, the band, which is sitting over in the corner with their accordions and stuff, they start striking up. See, the whole thing. See, they play the theme, see? The Hungarian American hour, see? They start whistling and blowing the horns and all that stuff. And they're cheering like mad, and they're pressing this Hungarian wine on me, which, by the way, has a certain primal charm. You drink 3 or 4 gallons of Hungarian wine, and you're not going to have much trouble at night. Unless, of course, you hit your head on a curbstone or something like that. So they're pressing this Hungarian wine. I mean, all this great Hungarian food. And they're running around, you know, they're shaking my hand. So the only thing I can think to say, see, I'm up at the speaker's platform by this time, and a band is playing. I look out over the crowd, and I say, Yo, shit, Kavana, get me short of time. And they cheer. Fantastic. Thank you. Well, that night, I received an award. I was getting an award, see. And the award was that I and Cornelius had done more than anybody at the time, apparently, in forwarding the well-being and the good health of the Hungarian community. And they all thought I could speak Hungarian because I introduced the show in Hungarian, you know, which Cornelius had taught me over a long, very difficult, angry afternoon when the other announcer, who had been my predecessor, had left trailing smoke and flames after a fantastic argument. He finally went in the station and says, look, I've been here 9 years, and I think it's time I got paid. And, of course, that was absolutely the worst thing he could have said, and he was thrown out on his ear. And they even took his, you know, the stuff they had lent him, like they lent him a hot plate, and they took his hot plate back. You know, where you could cook your Heinz and Campbell's pork and beans, which you lived on. So they took his hot plate away, and he ran out into the street. I remember that announcer, Ed. And that was how I got my job. So I had to learn 9 introductions. There were 9 languages on the station, and I had to learn 9 introductions. And since that was all I did on the station, I learned them well. And I still know all 9 of them. And some night, when I'm really feeling in, really feeling the groove here tonight, some night, Jerry or Nick, you can prevail upon me to give 9 different introductions to 9 languages. What 9 were they? Let's see if you know. All right, you already know Hungarian, and you know the Polish. I had the Polish thing. What else? Greek. Yeah, there was a Greek one. What else? Croatian, of course. We opened the station with Croatian. And that was always exciting. I would play the Star Spangled Banner. And believe it or not, they had a Croatian version of it. Have you ever heard anything like that? That's right. We played in the morning, they played the Star Spangled Banner, and there was a band playing it, and there were Croatians singing the Star Spangled Banner. So, all right, now you got it. You got Croatian, you got Greek, you got Hungarian, you got Czechoslovakian. What else? Come on. Come on. What? Polish? That's right. What else? Ukrainian. Okay, of course. And if you do a Ukrainian hour, you cannot get away with doing a Ukrainian hour without having a Lithuanian hour. Because at which point, if you did that, you would have a riot on your hands. So we did a Lithuanian hour. And, all right, go ahead. And while you're thinking about that, this is Shepard introducing the House of Chan commercial, which is an elegant Chinese restaurant here in town, and I would like to recommend it highly. It's at 52nd and 7th Avenues. And I'm not going to ask you to go in and order your food in an elegant Mandarin dialect. It might embarrass some of the waiters down there who only speak low Cantonese. However, the food is elegant, and you'll enjoy it. And if you're going to a theater that night, make sure that you tell them that. The Chinese word for theater is hanga. You say that to the waiter. By the way, the heavy-set one with the fancy ties is named Stanley. Actually, that's the Chinese Stanley, which is S-T-C-H-N-L-E-E. Shanwei is actually the way it's pronounced. So the food is good, the people are elegant, and they've been there for 35 years, and if they can make it for 35 years at 52nd and 7th Avenue, they got to be good. That's a tough neighborhood, man, for any place to survive unless it's great. Right? 52nd and 7th, the big time. Food is great. They're open 7 days a week till midnight. We have another commercial here. You're still trying to think of the other languages, huh? Hey, you know, it's funny about that. After working with these guys all that summer, it was such a sweatbox and such a hot place to work. That reminds me, by the way, I'm going to be on Long John Show tonight. Oh, no, John, I'm making no inference there. But I am. So if you want to stay up late, John and I are going to do what they call cut up a pot. We'll slice up a little rhubarb. And what does he say? Doesn't he use that phrase? What does he say, call it? Yeah. Cut up a jackpot. That's it. But nevertheless, these languages got into your... You know that you can learn languages. I'm serious, Nick. Have you ever tried to learn a foreign language? Did you try to learn it in school? I see. Well, you know, there's no way to learn a language like hearing it all the time. And it's fascinating how a language all of a sudden becomes very apparent to you. I used to sit in the control room, and this stuff would pour out at me 7 days a week. I mean, really, 7 days a week. And you know what used to... finally got to the point where, unknowingly, and without even any real conscious effort or even any conscious knowledge of it, I would sit in there, and I would be listening to the guy doing the Polish show, and it would suddenly hit me halfway through the Polish hour that I'm listening to Polish. And I'd just sit there, and I knew what he was saying. I knew, you know, and I think that's the best way conceivable to learn a language. And once you start learning it that way, it's very simple to pick up the accent, because that's the way you've learned it. You've learned it from a guy that speaks it, you know, and he's really speaking it. So I got to the point where, of the nine languages, I could understand. I could walk around and on the street when I hear somebody speaking one of these languages, I can get the drift of what they're talking about. Now, I could never... I was terrible in academic languages. I really hated academic languages. I remember taking two semesters of Latin, and I hated it. I used to hate... if there's any class that I hated to go into, it was every day going into that class. There was this lady named Miss Sparks, and she would teach us, or at least she would expose us to Latin. And I can remember all these lists written down the board all the time. You know, hic, hic, hoc. Oh, God, puella, puella. And I'd sit there, my head is going to sleep. I'd hate it. But 5 minutes later... And we'd be down at the radio station, and this guy's knocking off Polish or Ukrainian or Lithuanian. But the only trouble is, I find, that unless you stick with a language, if you learn it that way, you tend to forget it. It's like, it's like what they always say about Chinese food, man. I mean, it does. It goes away, but not really, not completely. And I will hear echoes of it when I go, like if I go abroad and I'm sitting in an airplane. And like one day I had a fascinating experience. I was in a plane that was going to... one of the stops it was making was Prague. And there was nobody on this airplane. I was the only American. And there were these people sitting around in front of me and in back of me in the plane. And we were riding along. And they were talking... They were, of course, speaking Czechoslovakian. And they assumed that I could not understand Czechoslovakian. Apparently, I have the map of southern Illinois and northern Indiana printed on my face, you know, and I'm sitting back there. Well, I could not understand. Honestly, they were right. I could not understand Czechoslovakian, but I could get the general drift of it, of what they were saying. And I could hear words once in a while I'd pick out. You'd get key words like look and hear and listen, words like... them, they, words like food, you know, just general words. You hear these things going on and on. And that night, though, at the Hungarian-American Hall was a fantastic night, because these guys had all been drinking Hungarian wine for about an hour before I showed up. You know, they were really feeling great. And so I got right in there. I've never been known to be backward at a party of that type. So I get in the middle of all this. I'm eating the Hungarian food. And every time one of these guys would come up to me, and he'd grab my hand, of course, these listeners, see, grab my hand, and he would say something very effusive in Hungarian. And he always wind up, Janos, which is the Hungarian gene, believe it or not. He'd say, Janos. And I would laugh, and I would say, oh, you're a shted, come on, a kid. But you need to laugh, you know, because this is the introduction to the show. It would be like, you know, it would be like Jackie Gleason saying, oh, how sweet it is. You know, and they'd love it. They recognized this, and they thought that I was just saying this, but I could have said a hell of a lot more if I wanted to. So I left that hall trailing glory. And, oh, man. And I also got a fantastic date with a Hungarian girl, which will form the basis of a show which we will tell some night when all the kids are in bed. However, that's another show. But, you know, hearing this thing here, this polka, it got to the point where I knew all the various polkas. You know, there's a whole great list of classical polkas that the Polish dig and the Hungarians, not too much the Hungarians, but they, you know, that's part of it. But that whole Middle Europa scene, and the polka seems to be the basic the basic thing that runs through it. And some of them, some are great, like for example, America the Beautiful Polka. Have you ever heard that one? Yeah, this is an America the Beautiful one. There's the Dawn Patrol Polka. You ever heard that one? Have you ever heard the Colonel Bogey Polka? Yeah, and all these things they made into polkas. Now, the polka that most people know, of course, is very primitive ones, like the Beer Barrel Polka, which incidentally is a legitimate polka and was a very big hit many years, apparently, long before it became, you know, a pop tune. But that was a, you know, big thing. So I got really involved in this stuff. And the polkas, I got to the point where I hated polkas so much because it was all wrapped up with this whole place. It was hot in there every day, and the guys that were coming into the car place would look in with these dumb looks, watching our wind-up turntables going around. And I'd start at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would wind up late at night, and the sound eternally, the sound of polkas all the time. And every time I hear it, bum 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 bump, bump, bump. You know, they hit that, you heard that after kick they get on those things. When the entire building would rock. I went to a Polish wedding one night on the south side of Chicago in a place called Hegwisch. I mean, it's a Polish name even, Hegwisch. And what a place. I mean, it's on a Saturday night, Hegwisch was like a cake of yeast. And we used to go to Hegwisch all the time, all these guys I know. And because, you know, we just ride around and look at the women. And they were unbelievable. And this was Hegwisch. Well, you ever hear the term Hegwisch? Never heard of Hegwisch? Well, I'm telling you, Hegwisch. You know, it's funny. I just assume everybody knew about Hegwisch. Do you know that in this country, you may not know this. I don't know why I'm doing this thing tonight. It's just one of those things. But do you know that in Chicago, in case you're interested in statistics, and some of you are, in Chicago, there has consistently been a larger Polish population than in the city of Warsaw in Poland. Did you know that? So you know, it's an integral part of the life there. And there's a whole area of Chicago which is really essentially Polish on the south side called Hegwisch. And it is really a separate part of Chicago. It's a whole area there. When you get into Hegwisch, you know you're in Hegwisch. Well, did you know that there is a city in the Midwest that is a city without... Well, I'll ask you a question. What is the city within a city? Okay. Hamtramck. Agreed. And what is the city it is in? Detroit. All right. Now, Hamtramck is completely surrounded by Detroit. You understand that? It's like a peach kernel right in the middle of a peach. Hamtramck. And and Hamtramck has its own radio station, a whole bit, see? And it's essentially what population is Hamtramck? Right, right. You can assume it's not English, right? It's not a bunch of Swedes living in Hamtramck. And in Hamtramck, like anyone who has any knowledge of Polish life, and that type of life, Polish, even Czechoslovakia, this is a life of tremendous, gusto, fantastic gusto and vitality. More pinochle is played in the confines of Hamtramck and Hickwish than quite possibly the entire world combined. These are the original pinochle players. And you may not know that pinochle is the national game of the Polish. Did you know that? Well, I'll tell you, if you think that Bobby Fischer can play chess, I learned to play pinochle under some fantastic masters. For example, there was a great pinochle quartet when I was all the way through my high school days that would gather in the basement of Bolek Rakowski. Now, that's about as authentic as you can get. Bolus Rakowski, great national... Before we go any further, let's do a couple of commercials, right? Hey, let's see. Here we go. Let's see. Commercial. We did the House of Cham. And, there, got them on tape. Fine.
Food, passion, home. Three subjects that interest just about everybody. Three subjects that are featured every week in Sunday Newsday's L.I. magazine. Three subjects that make up L.I.'s popular living section. Yes, every Sunday in beautiful color, L.I. Magazine offers articles on food, fashion, and the home. Articles that are geared to the special interests of Long Islanders. This Sunday, you'll find a mouth-watering word and picture guide to cheese from around the world. In fashion, you'll get step-by-step directions on how to give haircuts in your own home. And speaking of home... Wait till you see the picture of a home on Long Island painted pink, red, lavender, yellow, peach, and a few other colors. Elsewhere in Sunday Newsday, you will find a special supplement devoted to the Long Island business outlook. This Sunday, see why Newsday is Long Island's own Sunday newspaper.
Current issue of TV Guide magazine. As television prepares to broadcast the epic film Lawrence of Arabia, Lowell Thomas provides his personal recollections of the life and times of T.E. Lawrence. In the same issue, sports writer Melvin Derslag zeroes in on the NBA's tiny giants, the small men under 6 feet two who are surviving in a big man's game. TV Guide's cover story profiles Michael Antkeen of the Rookies. A few years ago, he had a chance to chase a puck for the New York Rangers. Instead, he chose to chase bad guys as one of the Rookies. Michael Antkeen, featured this week in TV Guide, America's biggest selling weekly magazine. TV Guide, on sale everywhere.
All right, I'll ask you. You know, that was an interesting spot, listening to that, because I happen to know Lowell Thomas. And, I wonder how many people are aware of the fact that the phrase Lawrence of Arabia was created by Lowell Thomas. Did you know that? That there was no such thing as Lawrence of Arabia until Lowell Thomas coined the phrase. There was just a colonel, a British colonel, operating in what was then apparently Arabia during World War One. And he was what we would call probably today a guerrilla leader, but he was not called Lawrence of Arabia. He was just simply a Colonel T. E. Lawrence of the British Army, and Lawrence was assigned to him as a correspondent in his early days as a newspaper reporter, and he wrote a book called Lawrence of Arabia, and that caught all over the world. And that's how he got. This guy got called that. He would have been totally unknown if it wasn't really from the world at large. If it wasn't for Lowell Thomas, I talked to Thomas about him too. So, you know, he says he's nothing like Peter O'Toole. The first thing he says, he's nothing like Peter O'Toole. He's totally different. And he says there's a lot of balderdash around about Lawrence of Arabia. He says very little of it has any relationship to the real one. And who would know better than Thomas, who was there? Hey, you know, speaking of, they mentioned here athletes that have made it, who is now acting. I'll ask you a question, Nick. What actor who does TV stuff and also occasionally a movie is an ex St. Louis Browns second baseman? St. Louis Browns second baseman. Now, there's an interesting question. We'll leave that just sit for a while. Okay. And by the way, did you ever look up Chuck Connor's record? Uh-huh. How many home runs did Chuck Connors hit during his career? I could tell you exactly. 7 during his career, which really was only 2 years long. What was his average? Well, reasonable. But who is the second baseman? You know, I was going to tell you one more thing before we leave the subject of the Polish and Pinochle. One of the great compliments of my career as a kid, as a person, as a walking around guy, was the time that I was invited to become part of this fantastic Pinochle quartet. Polis Rakowski, Frank Paswinski. Now, there's a couple of authentic names, right? And Stasz Wozniak. Great. I mean, these guys were to the Pinochle world of the male kid, age 14 world. They were like Bobby Fischer to chess. These were past masters. These guys remembered every card that had ever been played since their third year as three-year-old kids. Unbelievable. And I became part of that fantastic quartet that would play Pinochle down in Polis Rakowski's basement every night while his mother cooked cabbage on the stove right next to us. I mean, you know, stuffed cabbage. You know what that? You know what? Or what is stuffed cabbage called in Polish? Oh, come on. Well, you don't even deserve to know that. This is one of the great gustatorial treats of the world. Real Polish stuffed cabbage. It's enough to bring, you know, it's a fantastic aphrodisiac, by the way. Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. I mean, after a couple of great big wallops of Polish stuffed cabbage, I remember one time meeting this girl named Helene Kubiak. Oh, well, these are things that you shouldn't even know about. I'm going to talk about this. Who was the second baseman? Come on. I'll just let you think about that. Now, he was a second baseman with the St. Louis Browns. He's now an actor. And he was a regular second baseman. Not a guy that came up for a cup of coffee. Yeah. This is WOR New York.
You stay tuned for Lester Smith and the news.
The news in detail on the hour from the WOR newsroom. Once again, a shooting attack on New York City police officers. Tonight, two patrolmen pulled their squad car in front of a late model black Buick Electra at Newport and Sackman Streets in Brooklyn. One unidentified man got out of the car and opened fire with an automatic rifle, wounding the two patrolmen. The wounded officers were identified as 28-year-old Carlo Imparato and his 32-year-old brother, Vincent Imparato. They were last reported in satisfactory condition at Brookdale Hospital. The gunman fired at them through the patrol car's rear window. Police said that at least 10 bullets smashed through the car. The gunman, described as a young black, got back in the car and fled with two other men. No license plate number on the getaway car was reported. Police said the car had been stopped by the patrolman for a traffic violation or a routine check of registration. Tonight, Governor Nelson Rockefeller says he is ready to expand the state's court system, including the appointment of 100 temporary Supreme Court justices. Rockefeller also announced his readiness to expand narcotics treatment and correction facilities to go along with his legislation for tougher treatment of drug pushers. The governor also wants to recruit volunteer attorneys to serve as defense counsel and as prosecutors. As for costs, Rockefeller said he's prepared to recommend the appropriation of over $19 million to put 4,900 more people behind bars by July 1st. And the governor said he can recommend that the state legislature approve over $8 million to expand treatment facilities for addicts. A privately owned methadone clinic in an Eastside Manhattan neighborhood apparently don't fit together. Today, City Councilman Carter Burden led a protest demonstration of several neighborhood residents against the Ithaca Clinic at 177 East 84th Street. Standing outside the clinic, Burden said the clinic's owners are a construction company, the HST Corporation, and Stuart Steiner, a clinic administrator. Although Burden said he had no specific evidence, Burden said he suspected that the clinic had been put there as a blockbusting method to force tenants to leave so that more profitable buildings could be constructed. Burden estimated that the clinic has net profits of up to $500,000. Neighborhood residents complained about what they said were dazed narcotics addicts loitering outside the clinic, and one businessman said that he was losing customers because they were afraid to go to his shop. A cold rain fell on the South Central Texas Ranch just before the burial late today of the 36th President of the United States. Among those at the ranch to honor the memory of President Lyndon Baines Johnson were Senators Hubert Humphrey, George McGovern, Henry Jackson, Edward Kennedy, Strom Thurmond, and Edmund Muskie. Also present were Mr. Johnson's friends from his Texas political days, former Texas governor and one-time Treasury Secretary John Connally delivered one eulogy, and then evangelist the Reverend Billy Graham said of Mr. Johnson,
"To him, the Great Society was not just a wild dream. It was a realistic hope. And it seemed to me that those that knew him would agree that the thing nearest his heart was to harness the wealth and the knowledge and the greatness of this nation and help every poor and every oppressed person in the country and in the world. It was his destiny, as Secretary Connally has reminded us, to be involved in a war that he never wanted, as a certain..."